Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Anyone who's been exposed to someone with attention deficit disorder, ADD, knows the condition presents challenges to family and friends alike. More than 5% of America's young people suffer from the disorder, and many, if not most, carry it with them into adulthood. It can be difficult to manage, but our guest on today's program has spent much of his career helping people do just that. Dr. Wes Crenshaw has been on this program before. He's a psychologist specializing in family psychological services and adolescent therapy, and he is a columnist and author who writes on the subject. His latest book is I Always Want to Be Where I Am Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Sarah, a college junior who was diagnosed with ADD 2 years ago. And we want to hear from you. If you have questions relating to this disorder, please give us a call. Wes Crenshaw, nice to have you back with us again.
Pleasure to be here.
At the outset, let's find out what the distinction is between ADD and ADHD.
Yeah. Oh, dear. This is the sort of down the rabbit hole.
Exactly.
Well, back in the day, just before I started in this business, it was called attention deficit disorder, and you had with hyperactivity, and that made a lot more sense. And then this has turned out to be the worst branding change since New Coke. They changed it in DSM-3R, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 3R, to ADHD, which now everyone gets that diagnosis, even if you don't have hyperactivity. And that's a problem because the vast majority of people with this diagnosis don't have hyperactivity. The fundamental element is inattention. So it's confusing because you'll get a client come in and you'll say, you know, have you ever been tested for ADHD? And they say, I'm not hyperactive. And they're probably right. So that's the difference. We now, everyone gets that diagnosis.
So for the purposes of our conversation, shall we just refer to ADD or ADHD?
Oh, let's just stick with ADD. I do that in the book because it, first of all, is just better nomenclature. And secondly, it's easier to say.
You're absolutely right. Well, let's talk a little bit about it, what it is and how it presents.
Well, it's there are the set of criteria you see in the book which have to do with inattentiveness, impulsivity, a restlessness, whether that's mental restlessness or actual physical hyperactivity and movement. And then you see what it manifests itself in, both for children and adults. And there's a whole lot of kind of accoutrements that go along with it that aren't necessarily right in the book. For instance, the inability to be where you are. One of the principles in my book is that you have to be here and now. And that's really hard when you always want to be where you're not. You always are thinking like you want to be somewhere else or with someone else. Makes relationships very difficult. And there are even some things like some folks with ADD have a hard time telling the truth, not because they're psychopaths or something, or compulsive liars. You'll get people asking about that. But just because it's embarrassing at times, it feels bad to not be in sync with everybody else, and so you try to cover up your shortcomings. So there's all those little things that go along with it.
Someone who has ADD, does he or she have it from birth? Is it something that develops later on?
Yeah, this is still an area that's being studied in the literature. But one of the things we know for sure is that you can – there's only about one thing you can predict in heredity more than ADD, and that's height, believe it or not. So it's highly heritable, and it will sometimes skip a generation. But if you – do a good evaluation with someone, if you talk to them about their first order relatives, brothers, sisters, mother, father, and then even aunts and uncles, grandparents, you'll begin to see patterns of people who may not have been diagnosed but have a whole lot of the signs of that historically. Maybe they moved from one career to the next or had five marriages or, you know, couldn't even hold a job easily. So you'll begin to see some of those sorts of things in their history.
So a genetic component, obviously.
Yeah.
Does it men or boys suffer from it more than women or girls?
Well, we think this has begun to tighten up a little bit between male and female. But we've seen more boys diagnosed historically, and that is partly because the easy thing to see in a person is hyperactivity. And boys tend in our society to be a little bit more busy in that regard. But so do the non-hyperactive boys. Boys just are more doers. And so we miss a lot of the girls, or we historically have missed a lot of the girls.
What should parents be looking for?
Well, from very early on, the kids that are easy to spot, my little boy who's sitting quietly in the other studio right now, when he was in kindergarten, it got to the end of kindergarten and we found out that he'd stood by his desk the whole year. He couldn't sit in his desk. So there are the obvious ones that in the kindergarten, first, second grade just aren't able to be still. The more difficult ones to find are the ones who simply are not able to finish or start certain tasks, can't get material out of a book that we can get, read through it, particularly if it's not interesting. But they may not even read for pleasure. Even books that are really exciting for them, they just may not be able to digest. Being kind of always involved in a different activity than the one you're in right now, wanting to get on to something else, very noticeable for kids, that mental restlessness, you might call it. And so you also see kids that are smart, particularly if they're gifted or at least average, just not performing well in school.
Is this something that can present in adulthood, having had few or little or no indication of it prior?
Yeah, and here's how that works. At any point, and it's actually true, the smarter you are, the more this is true. The higher an IQ you have, the more what I'm about to say is true. So you go through 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade. The work gets a little harder, Maybe you don't have to work very hard to do okay. My daughter waltzed in and took the ACT the other day and got a 30 on it. Never even studied it, not even thinking about it. What she learned from that is you don't have to try very hard. If you're smart, you'll do okay. That's how a lot of kids with ADD get through school. They're smart. They pick things up auditorily. They don't have to read. Get it out of the lecture. Then you hit your Waterloo. You get into freshman year of college particularly. I think Sarah will talk to us later about how that hit her in her freshman year. And maybe it's law school. Maybe you get all the way to graduate school. You didn't have to. You got an easier major and decided to go to law school then. And you get into law school and there's all that library full of books and you have to read them all. And that's when you hit your Waterloo. So where the work gets harder is where people begin to fall down.
Can it be something that is developed in middle age?
I see. Actually, my main practice is young adults and kids, but I see, because I specialize in ADD, I see plenty of people in the post 30 years who may be getting into a much more difficult job. They've advanced their career. In the military, you see this. It's one thing to be out in the field or out in the fleet, and then you get advanced to college to do officer training. There's your Waterloo. So it's about mental exercise. It's about the ability to sustain mental effort, and that gets harder the farther you go.
You know, we were talking about this the other day, members of the staff, and there are so many symptoms of this that it actually—
You mean all on the staff?
No, just the host. Yeah. No, there are so many different things you can look at that all of us have, you know, certainly one or more of the things that you'd be looking at.
Yes, and this is kind of one of there are two things that go around, sort of the old myths that go around. One of them is that nobody has ADD. There's a book out now that ADD doesn't exist. And this is just made up. This is just not true. Any mental disorder is something we say that it is. It's a series of perceptions or behaviors or emotions that we as a society agree constitute a disorder. So we can argue, as Thomas Zaz did for many years, that there's no such thing as mental illness. But if you're going to accept that there's mental illness, ADD exists. The other version of that is the one you mentioned, which everybody has ADD. And if everybody had ADD, then no one would have ADD because it is a distinct difference from the mean, from the norm group. So the question is, whether if you have some of those symptoms, and this is how I talk about it in the book, are you a leaner or are you really diagnosed? And there's plenty of leaners, but there's also plenty of people who lean to the anxious side. They just care too much, and the ADD people don't care enough. And I don't mean morally. I just mean in terms of what they pick up on. And so the leaners aren't impaired enough to really get a medication or a treatment. That's just an interesting part of one's personality.
And cause?
For leaning?
Of cause for ADD.
The cause?
Is there a cause?
Well, I think we go back to genetics, but I think it's also it raises an interesting point, is our society is considerably more discombobulating now than it used to be. You know, I can drive around the block five times before I find your parking garage. Parking garages have been very hard to find this week. And that – and or being a little scattered or losing your keys, we've got a lot to do in our world. And technology has become so much a part of it that that either helps us or just kills us. Depends on how you use it. So the world's – it isn't exactly making us more ADD, but it challenges our ability to sustain mental effort like it never has before.
How about managing it?
Well, this is an interesting area. You know, if you get on the internet and you study treatments for ADD, you would think that there is a huge controversy about this, that there's all these different opinions and people differ, and they really don't. There's really not a big controversy. The major mental health and psychiatric and medical associations and American Academy of Pediatrics all agree that the best treatment is a combination of stimulant medication and a psychotherapy process designed to get you kind of organized, coach you through some of those difficult daily activities and organize, which is kind of why I wrote the book, to give a manual for that process. So the treatment philosophy is pretty clear. Now, if you can do things like a diet change or some other sort of lifestyle change and your symptoms do get appreciably better, you probably didn't have ADD to begin with.
All right. Well, we want to bring Sarah into the conversation. Oh, before we have Sarah, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Sarah is joining us and has very patiently been waiting to get into this conversation. Thank you for being so patient, Sarah. Before I put some questions to you, I just want to – you mentioned stimulants as part of the medication. That seems counterintuitive to me if we're talking about a degree of hyperactivity.
Yeah. Back when I was in graduate school, this was referred to as the paradoxical impact of stimulants. And it's really not paradoxical when you understand the brain chemistry. The part of the brain that allows us to focus, and focus is about not staring at the white lines in front of you as you're rear-ending the guy. Okay. It's about picking out all the things from the environment, using driving again as a metaphor. Is there, you know, there's a sign, there's a stoplight, there's a person, there's another car, there's one coming up behind you, and your job in that situation and in anything in life is to pick out what's important. Well, the part of our brain that does that, so we're not just like our cat or a dolphin or something, is we have a frontal lobe, and that part of the brain helps us select what we want to focus on. Stimulant medication stimulates that part of the brain for people who have not enough dopamine in that part of their brain and allows them to then do the things that the rest of us kind of take for granted.
All right. Now let's go to Sarah. I'm going to have to take a break in a moment. But Sarah, let me ask you to react to anything that you've heard. Is there something that you would wish to comment upon?
Oh, well, that's a pretty loaded question because I could comment on every single thing that Wes said. So.
Cut her loose and she'll go. Yeah.
I know, and I'll just keep talking for the entire show. But I think a big thing is just kind of going back to the title of Wes's book, I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, is a major part of like where my focus comes from. Is I have trouble with focusing because I'm always thinking about what I need to be doing next. So I'll be like trying to do my homework, and on my sheet of paper I'll write a list of all the things I need to be doing right after that instead of actually doing my homework. So that's where my focus problem comes into play, is I'm always thinking about the next thing, thinking about what I need to be getting done later instead of thinking about the moment that I'm in. And I think that's a big difference, especially for college students, in differentiating whether you have ADD or whether you just – really need to actually try to focus. So a lot of college students will be distracted with things like Twitter or Facebook, and that's not where my focus problem comes into play. I'm not sitting there trying to do homework, and instead on Twitter I'm sitting there thinking about everything else I don't need to be thinking about. So I think that just makes the biggest difference between people who have ADD and people who don't, is the focus, is the lack of focus comes from a completely different source.
Well, and I think it's funny too, because some students, let's say the student really likes history and they hate math. That would be me we're talking about.
And me, by the way.
And so what is the homework they want to do? Here's their calculus that they're supposed to study for tomorrow's test. But, you know, they haven't read that history chapter. And so they do that. So these things, you know, like Sarah said, and I make a little list. Well, that sounds like a really good idea until you realize it's just another way to distract you from what you're supposed to do.
You know, because then I get to the next task and then I make a list while doing that. So it just doesn't work.
I do have to take the break, but very quickly, Wes, you talked about people with ADD being intelligent and smart. Do they typically have a higher IQ or is it an average IQ?
They're normally distributed, just like in the population. What's sad, though, about that is there's actually an older book on ADD called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid? And so many people with ADD feel like that part of their intellect is just cut off the top. They just can't perform like other people. So the gifted person doesn't feel very gifted.
Well, we'll pick up on these points and others when we come back. I'm talking with Wes Crenshaw, Dr. Wes Crenshaw, author of I Always Want to Be Where I Am Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Also joining us from Orlando, Florida, is college junior Sarah. We're just identifying her by her first name. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. I'd like to bring you into it as well. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. Back with our guests in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on attention deficit disorder. My guest is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's written a book on the subject. Its title is I Always Want to Be Where I Am Not. Also joining us from Florida is Sarah. She suffers from ADD. She's a college junior. Before we continue that conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Normandy High School will hold its final graduation ceremony tonight under its current school district structure. Earlier this week, the state voted to lapse the unaccredited district and reopen it in July under a different name and under an appointed school board. Zoo Museum District Commissioners are meeting at this hour to discuss the St. Louis Science Center's new budget. The ZMD takes in about $70 million a year in taxpayer money that benefits five St. Louis institutions, of which the Science Center gets about $10 million. The meeting comes at a time when commissioners are considering changes to its ethics policy after controversy in recent months. And Democrats in Illinois legislature are considering an expansion in Medicaid spending. They're considering restoring some services that were cut in 2012. This is occurring as Governor Pat Quinn makes his case for extending a temporary income tax increase that he says would avoid deep reductions in health care and education spending. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and with Sarah. Sarah, let me come back to you. You were diagnosed late, as I understand it, just 2 years ago. Give me some sense of what life was like before and what brought you to the point of seeking a diagnosis.
Well, like you said, I wasn't diagnosed at all through high school, and that was mostly, as Wes was saying earlier, just kind of a lack of needing to put in effort because I kind of had an easy high school, so I kind of just, you know, went through it like step by step and didn't have to put in very much effort for it. But as I got to college my first semester, my freshman year, all of a sudden things got really hard. And I was just taking general classes like English and math and like a linguistics class. But it was very tough for me to learn it. Even though I was really good at math and English in high school, I wasn't able to show that in my grades my first semester. And I spent hours upon hours studying, and it didn't show up in my grades at all. My effort that I put in wasn't being shown. And it was very frustrating because I was trying so hard. So my second semester freshman year, I kind of talked to my mom, and I was like, Mom, I think I might have ADD. I'm trying so hard in my classes, and I'm still just not retaining anything enough for my tests. And I would go to lectures, and I would write down every word that the professor would say, and I'd walk out of the classroom and wouldn't remember any of it. I'd look back at my notes, and it was like looking at it for the first time again. And that was incredibly frustrating. So I started out by seeing just a regular physician because I wasn't really sure what the process was about getting diagnosed with ADD, and she actually recommended a psychologist for me to see. And from there, I saw the psychologist, and at first he was actually kind of skeptical about whether I had it or not, because no one seemed to think that I had any symptoms of it because I hid it so well. And it turns out that I had really bad anxiety that covered it up. So I knew that I would forget things a lot, so I had Post-it notes written everywhere. I had them all over my desk, like just lined across my desk, different color-coded and everything, so I wouldn't forget things. And I would do that. I knew I didn't retain reading very well, so I'd put out time to read things three different times so I'd have it memorized. And after seeing the psychologist, I kind of talked to him about those things. And as soon as I mentioned the Post-it notes, he's kind of like, yeah, that kind of gives it away that you might have ADD. So we took some tests, and I took a test, and then my mom and my brother both took a test that kind of evaluated how I reacted to things or processed things. And he warned me that my test may seem like I have more ADD than what my mom and my brothers did because my anxiety covered up my symptoms. And sure enough, he was right. But after talking to him for multiple sessions, we kind of came to the conclusion that I did have ADD. But it definitely took a few sessions with him for him to get to know me and how I process things and work through different situations in life for him to come to that conclusion. So it definitely takes time to do it. And it's not one of those like checklist type of things.
Your mother and brother have it as well?
No, but they took a test to evaluate whether I had it or not.
Yeah,
but I do have an older brother who does have ADD as well.
Yeah, that brings up a good point about diagnosis, because it's one of the things I like about Sarah's story is it illustrates the correct way to proceed in diagnosis. And you need someone who's skeptical to start with, and then you use normative data for testing, and you have more than one observer beyond just the client fill out those materials.
Sarah, I understand your frustration with all of this throughout. were you frightened by it at all?
No, I wasn't really. I kind of didn't even really realize that there was a stigma behind having ADD until after I was diagnosed. And even then, it never really bothered me. To me, it was more kind of a relief, because all along I just thought that I was lazy and stupid, and that's why I didn't process things well, and that's why I could never remember what people were saying to me when I was having a conversation. And so for me, it was just a relief that I was going to get to experience life the way I should have been experiencing it all along.
You know, we learned some good news about you today, and your GPA, your grade point averages, has just come out, and I understand you did pretty darn well.
Yeah, I did. I was very happy. Going into this spring semester, I had 17 credits in 7 different classes, and I was very overwhelmed, because for someone with ADD, for anyone in general, that's a lot of classes to keep track of. And I had multiple tests a week. Every time I had tests, I had 3 or 4 tests a week. So it was kind of like having at least 6 finals weeks all through the semester. So I was really nervous on how it was going to come out, but I ended up pulling off a really great GPA, so I was very excited about that.
I'm going to tell it. I'm not going to. I got a text as we were prepping for this show when she got her grades in. And by the way, that's always an exciting thing to hear from somebody. She had a 3.6 GPA this semester and 17 hours in a major university, and in a pre-physical therapy program. So and that's one of the neat things about Sarah's story, is it really gives hope to people who don't think they can do some of these things. And you can, with good treatment.
Congratulations, Sarah, on that GPA.
Thank
That's terrific.
You.
How are you managing ADD?
Well, I actually manage it through taking Vyvanse, which is an Adderall-based medication for ADD. And I also see a therapist every 2 weeks, which I definitely recommend, because even though you have the medicine to help you focus, you also need to understand it a lot better, because then when you aren't on it, you can still function and still And even with it, like, the medicine helps a lot with focusing and things like that, but there's still you still have ADD, so there's still things you're going to do differently than everyone else. So it's very helpful for me, at least, to have an understanding of ADD in general, and so I always, can apply it to different situations.
I say in the book, she really brings up a good point. I say in the book that taking medicine without some therapy, maybe short-term educational therapy, is sort of like putting gas in your car and then driving around in circles in the parking lot. That doesn't mean you've really gone anywhere. To get to the mm-hmm. journey Sarah's talking about really requires you to reformat how you think about things and how you approach organization, how you approach finishing and starting tasks, and just a lot of things like that.
We have a lot of callers who want to get into this conversation, as we normally do, Wes, when you are here. So stand by. We'll begin with Christopher, our first caller from St. Louis. Go ahead, Christopher.
Yeah, hi. You know, with ADD and trying to complete tasks and the problems, I would even compare it to a physical pain of trying to focus your way through it and trying to even just something such as reading a book and sitting down and trying to enjoy reading a book. I can start to get into it, but once I get a chapter or two into a book, maybe not even that far, of reading it, it really is almost like a physical pain of trying to push your way through, trying to focus and stay focused on what you're reading, and then really not even, then having to go back and reread it because you're not even really remembering what you've read.
Christopher, yeah. Thanks for the call. Sarah, does that sound familiar to you?
Oh, it definitely does. I remember my freshman year, right after I was diagnosed with ADD, which helped so much for these classes I was taking, but I was taking a biology course, and I had to read chapters upon chapters to study for this test. One test had about 6 chapters, and I did not take my medicine that day, but even having taken it, I would have needed a little more work with reading the text and like retaining it at all and everything. But I had to read the chapters each at least 3 times to remember everything that I read. And granted, that's a lot of chapters to read at once, but I didn't read them all at once. It was like I read one chapter, and then a few hours later I read it again, and a few hours later I read it again, so I'd finally be able to actually learn it all and be able to bring it back out of my brain to like tell people about it, like what I learned and everything. So that's definitely an issue.
And I think the caller brings up something just really important. For many people who really have ADD and have it seriously, if you have it and you're not depressed, you probably don't understand your situation very well.
Yeah.
It is so difficult to feel out of sync with the rest of the world and unable to do the things they all seem to do just fine. And it brings on almost a sense of shame. I have clients who feel frustrated and even ashamed of what they do and how they do it and why they're not as good as everyone else. And this is just not any fun, and we like to move past that.
You mentioned depression.
And that's why it can be such a relief to finally be diagnosed like it was for me, because suddenly you don't feel that way anymore. You can actually, you know, do everything that you've been wanting to do at the same level everyone else is.
Let's bring in Ann. She wants to make this link between ADD and depression, I believe. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ann.
Yes, thank you. When you mentioned the lack of dopamine in the brain, I was diagnosed with ADD after I was diagnosed with depression. And it wasn't until I was put on a stimulant medication as an antidepressant booster that my depression symptoms began to improve. And the medicines that I've responded to are the ones that help retain the dopamine. And I was wondering if there's a causal relationship between depression and ADD, or if you could comment on the link. Thank you.
Well, you came right in at the right moment, because it is just, in my view, just as I said, many people go to a primary care physician, express frustration and disappointment and a lack of interest in activities, and walk out of there with a prescription for medicines for depression. Now, here's the really terrible thing about that. Most of the mainline medicines for depression are really better at relieving anxiety. Just as an example, like Lexapro, often used to treat anxiety. Well, the way I talk about this in the book, the anxious people care too much and the ADD people don't care enough. I don't mean morally. You may care about global warming, but I mean about what you notice and take seriously. Well, if you go in with ADD and come out with a medicine for depression and anxiety, and your anxiety goes down, then the ADD will get worse because you care less. You're not able, you know, one of the things that saved Sarah over the years, she and I have discussed this on the air before. Yeah, she had anxiety. So she would worry about her discombobulation. And I think you said you made up all these post-it notes and you have all these like lists and things. Okay, that saves you, but it doesn't make you not have ADD. And so the caller goes in, gets the medicine for depression, doesn't get to feeling any better because she can't think more clearly. Then once the stimulant is present, that fixes the core issue.
Sarah, do you want to add anything to that?
It's definitely...
I'm sorry. I think the caller is still there. Ann, go ahead.
No, I wanted to say I actually had to try almost every SSRI on the market until I found one that you know, kept the dopamine in. And then once they gave, even before I was diagnosed with ADD, they gave me stimulant medication as a depression booster, is what they called it. And then my depression symptoms also started to go away, and as you said, I think it's because I could function better. But I just wonder if there's a more direct link, maybe without the anxiety component. And I'll go off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann.
I don't think there's a neurological link that's been made. There sure is a movement lately and to do the thing you just described. It's interesting you bring it up, but there are some physicians who are liking to give people stimulants for depression. I actually don't think that is the way to think about this. I think you should test the person for ADD. That's where the stimulants really seem to help. But there's a little controversy about that.
And Sarah,
also, I don't think you want to take stimulants if you don't need it.
That's right.
In my opinion.
I agree.
You know, I'm sensing here, and not directly related to depression, but is there any kind of a link between ADD and obsessive compulsive disorder?
Well, there's an interesting thing. I had a psychologist friend I was having lunch with, and I was yakking about ADD. And he said, you know, I have OCD. And I said, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that. I said, you're just like the total opposite of the ADD people, aren't you? And he said, no. He said, we just focus on the wrong things. We're obsessed with these little detail things. It takes us completely off task, too. So it's a little different. It's an anxiety problem. It's an intense focus on stuff that probably doesn't matter. But it's treated differently, and the stimulants generally will not fix that. It could even make it worse.
We have to take another break. We'll do that now. Lots of calls. I'll get to as many of them as we can when we come back. We're talking about ADD, as I'm sure you've realized by now. My guest in studio is Dr. Wes Crenshaw. His latest book, I Always Want to Be Where I Am Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Joining us from Orlando, Florida is college student Sarah, who has ADD, and we're happy to have her with us. By the way, Sarah, you should go into radio. You've got a beautiful voice for radio.
Thank you.
We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Okay, welcome back. As we continue our conversation on attention deficit disorder with Wes Crenshaw and Sarah, a college student, I have a twofer here. I have a tweet from Ed who says, can you speak to how ADD impacts relationships? Living with an ADD spouse has been a difficult challenge. But before we answer that, let's go to Sandra in Bridgeton, who I think is on that same wavelength. Go ahead, Sandra.
Hi. My husband also has ADD. He's 50 now, and he was diagnosed in his mid-20s. And it was an amazing revelation. All of a sudden, everything made sense to him as to what had gone on his whole life. And one of the aspects that I haven't heard talked about yet that he has with his ADD is hyper-focusing.
Yeah. Well,
I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yes. Let me say that the book, Knowing What You Say Is True About the Difficulties of ADD People and Their Partners, the book is really written not just for people with ADD, though I did write it so they can read it, set up for easy consumption so that it has a good table of contents. You can go through and find just what you need. Each chapter has a checklist to see if it even pertains to you so you don't waste your time on anything you don't need. But the book is also written for the loved ones of people with ADD as kind of an owner's manual so you can get in there and figure out what's going on in their heads. The specific, and I have a chapter 11, is all about relationships and how to live together, which is always the hardest thing anyone does. But the issue of hyperfocus, this is, when I earlier mentioned, it's sort of like staring at the white lines in front of your car as you're driving, and then you rear-end the person in front of you. That's hyperfocus. And it means that you get so interested in something, whether it's a book or your new girlfriend or your hobby. Hobbies can be wonderful and terrible at the same time for that reason. You get so interested in math or science that you don't pay attention to anything else. And you may do quite well on that test or with that relationship, but then all the other things in life go to pot and you will end up worse off than you were at the beginning. That's hyperfocus.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I think has actually aided him with being able to use the hyperfocusing, because he's an engineer.
Yes.
So he can concentrate on that detail stuff. And I think that that's one of the things that he learned to do, is how to use the tendencies that sometime come up.
In the book, in the end of every chapter, I have 13 principles and thus 13 chapters. And at the right toward the end of each chapter, I talk about the advantages of each of the issues I've been talking about for ADD people, you know, their ability to be creative, to focus on one thing to the exclusion of the other, or to be able to focus on lots of different things simultaneously. So there's always advantages. The more that you are a leaner, the more those advantages really pay off, or the more, like Sarah, you really get a grip on the problem, the more you can make those advantages pay.
Sarah, how about your relationships, if you don't mind my asking that? You don't have to go into complete detail, but have your relationships been affected by your ADD?
I would say they have been to an extent, because definitely my freshman year more, when I didn't really tell anyone that I had it, it was definitely tough because it was harder to keep relationships because I'd be so spacey, you could say. So when I'd be talking to people, I would want to be really into the conversation, really like devoted to them. But the next thing I knew, they were done with what they were saying to me, and I don't remember anything that they said. So that can kind of hurt your relationships, definitely, is that lack of focus when you're interacting with them. But after like being able to openly tell people, oh, this is my problem, and now I can just call myself out on it when I'm being really spacey with my friends. Like, I'm really sorry, I didn't hear what you said. Like, can you just repeat it? And because they know I have ADD, they're super understanding about it, and they'll just like repeat it again. So like talking about it with my friends has definitely strengthened those relationships. But hiding from it and not telling them about it can definitely hurt your relationships if you are very ADD around them.
Well, and relationships are all about picking up on the small details of things.
And I miss them every time.
It's tricky, isn't it? And and a lot of young people just do not understand the instruction manual for how these things work, and they get themselves into all manner of messes.
I think this is a good time to bring in Sue, calling from St. Louis. Sue, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Sarah, for sharing all of this. I'm wondering what strategies for studying and retaining information have helped you through college. You know, I know you're on medication, but do you do anything that kind of helps you focus? And does online learning pose a special problem? So many are going online. And, you know, just for me who doesn't have ADD, it's stressful. And I wonder how it is for an ADD student.
Well, first, talking about the online learning, definitely difficult because I have to put out the time myself to go out of my way to learn all the stuff, which I don't ever have the motivation to do when I'm being really lazy and spacey and stuff, and would prefer to just lay on a futon instead. But online learning is definitely more difficult. To an extent, because there's also the nice aspect where I can learn it at my own pace. And that means that I can take the time to like sit down and read through it all and focus on it rather than going to a lecture and forgetting what happened in the lecture later on. So it has its pros and cons to it. It kind of just depends on how you do with studying personally. If you know you can put that time aside to learn it yourself, then that's great. But if you need to be in a classroom setting, then I would definitely recommend staying away from the online classes. And then as far as studying goes, I actually have like this little system that works really well for me because it works great with like being able to pull the information back out after I've learned it. I'm very organized with color coding things. So say I have to learn four different chapters for a test in 2 days. I'll break each chapter up into a color, and each chapter will have its own, like one chapter will have a yellow note cards with yellow pen. So anything I write in yellow pen is going to refer to that chapter. Anything on a yellow note card will refer to that chapter. So when I'm on the test and I'm trying to think of things, I can think, oh, this word has to do with this chapter and that's this color. So then I can kind of go back and like think through what I learned with that color yellow. And then I'll be able to find the information from there, which helps so much. Even when you're not taking a test, I can still bring back things from anatomy tests that I've learned that way. It helps a lot when you have a lot of different facts you need to memorize.
Sarah, I'm sorry. Very quickly, did you figure this system out on your own, or was it recommended through therapy or something?
I figured it out on my own. It's kind of one of the things I did when I still was doing post-it notes before I was diagnosed. And it's just come in more handy since I've been diagnosed and am on medication.
One of the things I want to insert here is that this, Sarah, is such a good example of how this book came into being. This book is based on 23,000 hours and 22 years of clinical practice. And some of that is me telling people, this is what I think you ought to do. And some of it is people telling me, like Sarah's telling the audience here today, what works well for her. And I have pulled all that into the book. And she's just a good example of the wisdom that people who've struggled with this have to give us.
I want to go back to the phones. I think I have a call on line one, but I have no name there. Can we?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Erin.
Okay, Erin, go ahead.
St. Louis, and I was actually in grade school, high school, had various troubles, and no one realized that I had ADD. I'm about 43 now, so it wasn't as we knew it existed, but it wasn't, I don't think, diagnosed as much then. And I didn't actually get diagnosed until my last semester of college, at which point I pretty much decided not to go forward. And the doctor I was working with said, well, some people take medicines, but usually at this stage you're growing out of it. So I never really got any further treatment.
That used to be believed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, went on with my life. I knew I had some issues, but thought I was managing well until a few years ago when I was laid off. And I took the opportunity to sort of reevaluate my life and happened to get some information. I think there was a Channel 9 TV special about ADD. And I'm looking at everything they're saying, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. This has been impacting my life a lot more than I thought. And took the opportunity to get into some therapy and to check out the medicines. And actually, as a result of that, my mother ended up getting diagnosed, because we had a lot of similarities. And I'm back in school now because I never finished the first time. And I'm having some fears about getting back into the workforce because I know some of my struggles in my previous jobs. The biggest one is showing up on time, trying to get myself out the door in the morning, because when you take your medicines first thing in the morning, you have to wake up first and get out of bed to get your medicine.
Erin, thank you for the call.
In the morning thing.
You're striking some responsive chords here, obviously. Wes, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I want to. Every time I do a show like this, and Sarah's done several with me, we get calls like this, and I always want to point out there's this big trend now. I wrote about it in my newspaper column last week. Big trend to bash ADD as a diagnosis. And by doing so, bashing those of us who give it and bashing Sarah and bashing this caller, that y'all don't have anything wrong with you. You just ought to knock it off, or you have some different disorder, or you just need to exercise more, or whatever.
Or I'm just
and Sarah,
stupid.
I think you exercise just enough. So it when we get to callers like this and hear how they feel, they're happy, they're thankful, they're liberated from something that's oppressed them. This isn't about the drug companies and the jackboot heel of the man coming in and stomping everybody into these Stepford children. It's about liberation. It's about the freedom from this.
You know, Sarah, I don't know you, but I have a sense in just the communications that we've had over the last 50 minutes or so that you feel liberated, that this you're a much different person than you were 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And it feels great to be able to see what I'm capable of, because I know that there is definitely, I've heard it on my college campus, talk that taking medication for ADD makes you smarter and it's an unfair advantage. But that's not necessarily what it is at all. It's just allowing me to reach my potential. I've had this potential all this whole time. It's just been covered up by my ADD. This medicine just kind of takes that little cloak off and lets me perform as well as I'm capable of. So it lets me be as smart as I want to be, and that's what makes it so much greater, because you finally get to see what you're made of, I would say.
I'm so glad we have you on the program to say the things you're saying and saying it so well. We have a tweet here from Miriam in St. Louis, a teacher apparently, saying, how can we best teach students with ADD?
Yeah, this is often asked. It is a tough one. And I will give you I'm going to give you a slightly different answer, because I know you want to know sort of what's the pedagogy supposed to be like. And I'm going to give you a little bit more practical answer. The people with ADD all have the worst professors and teachers and wives and husbands and everything in the face of the earth. I know this because they come in and tell me that every week. And some of that is true, because either you get into classes with professors you haven't done your diligence on to find out if they're organized, if they're accessible, if they are easy to work with or strong, structured persons. But some of it is just being very sensitive to every little thing that can go wrong. So students need to be good self-advocates, whether they're in high school or middle school or college or beyond, and really pick instructors they're going to match well with. And though some people swear at it and some people swear by it, things like RateMyProfessor.com can provide some qualitative information for students to pick up on who are enrolling in classes. For the teacher, of course, the more organized you are, the more you can do the kind of things that Sarah is talking about for your students, you know, color coding and just clear syllabi and all that kind of stuff. That helps the scattered people. And when you're disorganized as an instructor, that's easier for the anxious people to handle, but it's tough for the ADD people.
Let's bring in Kelly calling from St. Louis with another telephone comment or question. Go ahead, Kelly.
Hi. My daughter was recently diagnosed with ADHD, and I suspected it from the time she was about 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And I saw symptoms that were similar to things I saw in myself, although I was never formally diagnosed. To accommodate that, I would teach her lessons in advance. So she remained in gifted classes through elementary school, and when I tried to get the school to evaluate her, they wouldn't, because she was in the gifted classes and they would call her quirky. So recently she has this diagnosis. She's in high school now, and she struggles so much. But I can't get her to want the help. In other words, I have this diagnosis. The psychologist has recommended certain accommodations for her. None include medication, however. And my daughter just doesn't want to be different, and it's affecting her relationships with friends. The thing that your daughter described, how she's not really aware of the conversation, so they think she's sort of an airhead, but she's missing the conversation because she's thinking about something else. And I don't know how to get her to be open to receiving the support she needs to be as successful as I know she can be.
It's really a tricky question. Mm-hmm. So there are two issues here, and one is this educational issue, and one is I'd call more the clinical or therapeutic issue. In the world of education, we, you know, everything is about funding, and we aren't funded well enough in education to do what we need to do. And so what's supposed to be an individualized education plan, if there's even one in place, it's called the IEP, it ends up being put them in the resource room. And nobody wants to be in the resource room. And what you want to do, if you can get her on an IEP, is to have it be individualized so it's doing what she needs to have done. And there's a whole bunch of those things for people with ADD that don't fit for people with emotional disturbances or mental handicaps. Those people don't all go together. And too often the schools lump them together. From a clinical standpoint, it really helps to have a good therapist who knows how to work with teenagers or young adults who can really connect. If you cannot connect, and believe me, the ADD people can be hard to connect to sometimes for the reasons that Sarah was citing earlier. But if you can make that connection, then the therapist can help, you know, convince the young person this is what it takes to be successful. And that takes some persuasion.
We have 1 minute left. Let me get this email from Kevin, and he's an attorney. He doesn't have ADD, but he says it was frustrating when he was in school seeing fellow students for academic advantage, sometimes with a prescription, used ADD medication. You alluded to that a moment ago, or a few moments ago, Sarah. Any thoughts about that from you, Sarah?
It can definitely be very frustrating because when people who don't have ADD take medicine for ADD, like stimulants, it kind of puts them a level above everyone else. And for me, I'm with ADD, I'm usually a level below everyone else. So my medicine puts me on everyone else's level. So it's kind of a very unfair advantage for those who do take it without having ADD because it puts them like a step up. And there's definitely tolerance issues where there's times where I'm not going to, even with my medicine, be on the same level as everyone else. So having them take advantage of a medication that I need to actually help me can be incredibly frustrating when it's to such an advantage for them.
15 seconds, Wes, can you respond to that?
Well, stimulant abuse is a problem on our campuses for learning and other reasons. And it's what I like to help people think is that's not synonymous with taking legit medicines for ADD. Those are two different problems and difficult ones.
If you want to learn more, you can pick up Wes Crenshaw's book, I Always Want to Be Where I Am Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Wes Crenshaw, thanks for being with us. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about Opera Theater of St. Louis's new season, Dance St. Louis's Spring Dance Festival, and Jazz St. Louis's concert in memory of Max Jazz record label owner Richard McDonald. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll have a holiday rebroadcast of our discussion about the colonial history of St. Louis. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer with production assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Amanda Huntingfort, Kyle Jacoby, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.